Cliff Powell down there in the Southwest, and he thought that'd be a good thing to start out Indian World with. This being the time of powwows, and we've got a big one coming up here in the Rose City. Samantha's here, and Samantha's going to tell us about the upcoming powwow.
OCO, John.
OCO.
Get out your pencils and papers, everyone. This is the 36th Annual City of Roses Delta Park Powwow and Encampment from June 16th to the 18th. That's this weekend. East Delta Park, North Portland, Oregon. The grand entries will be at Friday the 16th, 7 p.m., Saturday the 17th, 1 o'clock, and 7 p.m., Sunday the 18th at high noon. For vendors, call Gina Minas, 503-408-0357, 503-408-0357. And for any other information or memorials, call Sandy B. Allman, 503-740-5373. Sounds like it's going to be a good time. No alcohol, no sales of sacred items, of course, and have a good time. Sounds like a great powwow coming up.
Yeah, we'll have you announce that again later,
okay,
Samantha. A lot of people come in at different times, and if they missed it, then they'll have another chance at it.
Okay.
Well, because this is a festive period of the season, we're going to bring you a lot of music today. Some of it's going to be traditional, and some will be modern, and who knows what else will fall through the cracks. Got some new stuff here, something brand new. In fact, I'll hand it to Louis now and let him get it set up on the machine so that we can hear from the next album. Yeah, from the Out of the Earth Powwow, Songs of the Great Lakes Indians. Well, we were playing the Grand Entry song, and that was followed by an intertribal dance song. And I recognize the second one. Heard it here in Portland many times and heard it in other places. Well, if you don't know, you're listening to Indian World. This is your host, John Talley, and We're winding down our 30th year on the air and looking forward to another year, great one willing. It's been a long trip, and on the 6th of July, we're going to have a special. We'll be on again the 29th of the month, but that'll be our last show in this program's 30 years. And then July 6th, we will go on with a special that will be, again, will begin at 1 o'clock. Pardon me, at 12:30. I'll get it right. No, I was right the first time. 12:30. We're beginning a half hour early. At any rate, I'm usually on at 1:30, and we'll start at 1 o'clock. So I guess that straightens it out a little bit. And we'll come back to you about that and remind you later. Not a whole lot on the paper list here. We've had odds and ends come in. Some are things that we didn't feel were very important. Some things have come and gone, and, you know, that's the way things are. Our phone number here at KBOO is 503-231-8187 here in the air room. Now, in the air room, we can only talk to you when the music's playing, so please understand that. And, again, that's 503-231-8187. And if you have general information that you want or want to convey to someone, call the office at 503-231-8032. And that line is attended regularly. Opened the mailbox and found an envelope there from our old friend Spider Moccasin. We'll talk a little bit more about him later. But he sent us some music. From the BGM catalog, he says it's the only American Indian music he could find on it. And we're going to hear the title cut called Badlands. This is Ballads of the Lakota, and it's by Marty Stewart. I've never heard of Marty Stewart before, but we'll have a chance to listen to him now. And we're going to hear two cuts, Badlands and Trip to the Little Bighorn.
Goodwill come again to the Badlands. soldiers hang around like next of kin. But the shadows have eyes, and I hear voices in the wind telling me the second coming of the red man is closer than it's ever been.
J.J. Johnson of K-Blues Jade Place.
And I am Shaheed Hamid of The Essence of Soul. And on Thursday, June 29th, from 6 p.m. to 11 p.m.,
we'd like to invite you to Blues on the Boo.
We'll give you some history, some commentary, but most of all, some of the best blues in town with such great blues musicians as
B.B. King,
Coco Taylor,
Muddy Waters,
Etta James,
Robert Cray,
Denise LaSalle,
Bobby Bland,
Linda Hornbuckle,
Buddy Guy, and much, much more. This will be a preview of the Waterfront Blues Festival, which begins on Friday, June 30th.
So if you love the blues, join us, Shaheed Hamid and J.J. Johnson, on Thursday, June the 29th, from 6 p.m. until 11 p.m. for Blues on the Boo here on Community Radio 90.7, where it all started. The blues, the boo, and you, baby. Tune in.
I went to Little Bighorn. Not a single word was said, except one old lonely ghost said, "The general's still dead, general's still dead." I asked him if any Indians ever came to call. He said the last one that he seen rode off a big chief Gaul, rode off a big chief Gaul. Old Sitting Bull once told me on this very ground, he saw blue coat pony soldiers falling upside down, falling upside down. There was not a single leaf on a cottonwood tree. They were gone as the men of the 7th Cavalry, 7th Cavalry. I stood on Calhoun's Hill. Rain fell like shattered glass. I felt 12,000 soldiers' blood flowing through the grass, flowing through the grass. I saw 100 years of Indians dancing in the sun. I felt the Indian power, the battle is still won, battle is still won. When they shot him through the heart, I wonder if it hurt. They left Mrs. Custer's husband to die there in the dirt, die there in the dirt. Then a soldier came and took me to the train. He said, Custer's still in hell, boy, forget you ever came, forget you ever came. I went to Little Bighorn. Not a single word was said, except one old lonely ghost said, the general's still dead, the general's still dead.
Yeah, we picked that album up from the one and the only Spider Moccasin. He was kind enough to send us this album called Badlands, Ballads of the Lakota by Marty Stewart. And we heard two cuts. We heard the title cut, Badlands, and Trip to the Little Bighorn. So we're very happy that Spider forwarded that to us. And he's been busy doing a lot of stuff, but it varies a great deal. He's really quite a talented man, and he's a singer, songwriter, cartoonist, a DJ, muralist, activist, TV show host, graphic designer, event promoter, editor, playwright, animator, and Native American of Portland. And his folks are from Warm Springs. He is from Warm Springs, and his real name is Marcus Mosley. And he's been around for quite a while and done such a variety of things. It's amazing. And he's always he uses that word amazing a great deal. And I got teasing him about it because everything was amazing. So I've called him the Amazing Spider Moccasin, or just Amazing Man. And we're always happy to hear from him. He's been in touch with so many Native American musicians. It's a long list, but Aragon Starr, Blackfire, Gary Small, John Trudell, Native Roots, Judy Trejo, Arlene Sky, Nico Wynn, Karen Kitchen, Border Crossing, Without Reservation, Luke Warmwater, Trevino Brings Plenty, and more, and Freddie Trujillo, and more and more. So those are some of the people that he's performed with or helped to introduce or had some kind of a cross-pollination with in one activity or the other.
He's a great guy.
Yeah, he is. And he is an old friend of ours, and we wish him nothing but good. Louis, why don't we, this is Louis Sowa over here. Say hi, Louis. Say hi.
Hi.
Louis has been kind enough to sit in and engineer for us for a while, and the new arrangement is always a little difficult to transition into, and sometimes we know what we're doing, and other times we're guessing at it. Right, Louis?
That's correct.
Well, I'll tell you what. Why don't we go to that CD player number 3, and we'll have a touch of Spider Moccasin from his Imaginary Friends album. Let's hear All My Private Nightmares.
One of my.
Try not to think about Tiananmen Square.
I try not to dream aloud. It's all of my private
nightmares. I beware. I try.
Yeah, we heard Little Spider Moccasin there, All My Private Nightmares, and we're going to move on to a story about the Louisiana Purchase. Louis, number 16, please. And he's trying to talk on the phone and trying to do.
To the west of the great Mississippi lay the Louisiana Purchase. Thomas Jefferson knew how the West was won as he bought the Louisiana Purchase. As the Mississippi starts to flood again, as the waters start to rise, I'll be there holding your hand, saying a prayer to apologize. Even the Oregon Territory is deep inside the Louisiana Purchase. Got lost in this manifest destination, then got born again after the Louisiana Purchase. As the Mississippi starts to flood again, as the waters start to rise, I'll be there holding your hand, saying a prayer to apologize. To the west of the mighty Mississippi, the Rocky Mountains make the continental divide. Sunsets over the Pacific. Don't look east, or you'll go blind as the sun rises. As the Mississippi starts to flood again, as the waters start to rise, I'll be there holding your hand, saying a prayer to apologize.
We're listening to another cut that we just listened to, another cut by Spider Moccasin called Louisiana Purchase. And, you know, with this big celebration of our visitors from back east, well, that's an appropriate song for this particular time. The time is 2:02, and you are listening to KBOO Portland, 90.7 FM. On your radio dial here in Portland. And Louis, would you tell them what it is down the valley and up the gorge? It's right in front of you there. The green. I think it's on there. Well, we'll tell you in a couple of minutes. Let's hear another bit of music here from the Honor of the Earth powwow. We'll hear We're the People. We're a part of that. Okay, Louis has the frequencies now for, I always forget them, so I'd like to get them right. Louis, what are the frequencies down in the valley and up the gorge? Your mic isn't open.
In the Columbia River Gorge is 91.9, and in the Willamette Valley it is 100.7.
Yeah, and that's FM, folks. And right here in Portland it's 90.7.
And on the internet, it is www.kboo.fm.
Thank you.
And you can pick that up all over the states.
Yeah, we have over here at our left side guy who goes by the moniker of Fish. His name is Thomas Moser, or Mosser. Is it Mosser?
Mosser. Thanks for having me in here.
And he's a marketer for Native Casinos. Welcome once again to Indian World here. This is an area where there's a lot of interest and activity going on right now, the casino business.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. The casino industry is one of the largest growing industries right now, and the Native American culture is right in the head start of it. It is just booming.
And what is your tribal affiliation?
Mainly Ojibwe and Salish.
And I didn't catch the whole blurb this morning on the morning news, but I understand that Grand Ronde has made a major move forward in the casino business of expanding somehow or other. Do you know about that?
I haven't seen this morning's news as far as that particular expansion, but I wish the brothers over there in Grand Ronde the greatest success in their expansion. I know tribal casinos all across the United States now are expanding in leaps and bounds, and it doesn't surprise me at all to watch these small casinos start off and then just start growing and growing and growing and providing more services for the whole infrastructure of each tribe.
I saw a picture of the building, and it's a big affair. This is going to put in something like 500 new machines, I understand. And that's a major development. And, of course, it has to do in part with their success and the obvious competition between the different casinos. The different tribes have different casinos, and some are more successful than others. Some are better funded than others, too. What are some of the benefits you see coming out of the establishment of the casinos, Fish?
Well, the majority of the benefits that I see coming from the casinos immediately is the employment and education possibilities for all the tribal members there, both those that live on as well as off the res. Also, the monies that are generated by the casinos provided to allow funding for increased production, health care, medical, all sorts of different facilities. I know we had a casino that's just up north of us here, a tribe just outside of Olympia, Washington, who actually used some of their funds to invest into a manufacturing of cigarettes. So they're diversifying their industries by using casino profits.
That's great.
Well, you know, one of the things that I've noticed over the years of history is every time the Indians end up with anything useful, it's usually yanked away, or somebody just marches in and grabs it. And we already have one commercial effort being made to establish an off-reservation casino. And personally, I say Oregon should just go for it, because if we're going to be a gambling state, let's be a gambling state and be honest about it, you know. I mean, gambling has never been illegal. It's only been illegal when the state doesn't get its cut.
That's right.
So we have all these agreements, and the gentlemen's agreements between the tribes that have casinos to share some of their income with the state, which is a voluntary tax. And it's good to have a source of income right along now. And I know down there in the Gulf region, they were heavily dependent on those casinos for income down there, Mississippi. It was Choctaw people, I think, had the casinos down there.
There was Choctaw, and there was Seminole down there. And, in fact, there was a brand-new casino that was funded by the Hard Rock Corporation that was due to open 7 days just before Katrina hit.
Oh, boy.
Check it out.
Oh, boy.
So, yeah. There
was that in Mississippi or in Louisiana?
That was in Louisiana.
Well, of course, now they're talking once again about reestablishing them. I think one of them has reopened on a temporary basis, and because the winds and the waves just blew them right over. They were just a mess, along with everything else down there, practically. There's a lot of talk about, this is proposed to be off a reservation area, or they get quibbling about what constitutes a reservation land and what doesn't. And what are your observations on that subject, Fish?
Well, I tend to go against the grain a little bit. I am firmly against any enterprise of a gambling nature that's operated by a tribe to be off sovereign nation, to be off of its tribal grounds.
Why is that?
It's a little bit of a long story, but I'll try to make it brief. About a year and a half ago or so, there was a big momentum up in Washington State. The big drive behind it was to make gambling, quote-unquote, level playing field between the tribal and the non-tribal entities. But it wasn't even at all. The tribal casinos still had to maintain their casinos on tribal land, while non-tribal entities with large backers could put casinos anywhere, right downtown, on any cross streets. So then again, it wasn't fair. And I'm worried that down here, especially in Oregon and a couple other states where this is happening, if we bring casinos off tribal lands, that will only invite non-tribal entities to be able to come in, invest, build large casinos wherever they like, whenever they like, and basically drive the tribal casinos, who are under a lot of regulation, out of business.
They are under a lot of regulation, according to what I understand. Of course, you know, Indians have a whole set of laws. If they are federally recognized, then we're under a whole separate library of laws that doesn't apply to anyone but us. And some folks don't realize that's the case. We're in conversation with Thomas Mosser, known as Fish, who's a marketer for Native Casinos, and kind enough to spend a little time with us here on Indian World. How's this Cowlitz effort going up there in Washington? Have you heard?
I haven't heard anything in the last few weeks as far as the progress up there. But the last that I had heard, things looked pretty good, that things were a go.
Great.
They've got their permission from the feds and the state?
I don't know about the state side of it yet. I believe the federal government has already given its blessing. Now it's down to, I believe, the state and obtaining the funding. But I don't know that for 100% certainty.
Could you find that information out for us?
Sure. I'm sure that's readily available on the Internet through different news organizations as well as the tribe itself.
Great.
This is a little aside, but I think it's pertinent. At the end of the Clinton administration, he gave his blessing to a re-recognition of the Chinook people. Mm-hmm. And one of the very first things accomplished in the Bush administration was the yanking of the recognition from the Chinook people, who Lewis and Clark, on their great venture out here, discovered were very important people in the Indian world. And it was just a shame, it seems, that they can't be recognized. Sure, they're mixed up and they're scattered here and there, but that same thing is true and has been true of other nations. The Grand Ronde, for example, and the Siletz started to reweave their tribes once there was work for them and once there was a home for them again, and a way to support themselves and place to send their children to school and medical care, things like that. We all have to have a support system. We
Absolutely.
Don't live on air. And Indians are amazing people, but we do not live on air.
Mm. And you just came down from Manitoba from a casino, right?
Right, up in Manitoba, Canada.
Right. Can you tell us a little bit about something about what you did up there?
What I was involved in up there was actually the second, what they call, tribal-based casino. Operated entirely outside of the realm of the local lottery government. The Manitoba Lottery Corporation oversees all gaming, similar to like Oregon Lottery would. Mm-hmm. And they actually owned, or the Manitoba Lottery Corporation owns two very large, well-designed, well-thought-out casinos right in the downtown of the largest city in Manitoba.
Right.
Several hundred miles to the north, there was a small tribal effort, or what they call by bands instead of tribes up there, a band effort to put a casino together. And then I was involved in the second one, which was about a 30-minute drive outside of Winnipeg, called South Beach Casino. It was the casino put together by a consortium of different bands from the Southeast Nations up there. Actually, seven different bands got together, gave their blessings, put aside their differences, great, came together, got this industry going, and they opened up just a year ago this month.
Oh,
and they have been doing great guns up there, huge amount of success. And one of the proudest parts that I like was not only when I first started there, but hearing now, is that there's about a 60 to 65% tribal or Native American based employment within that casino.
Oh, yay. Oh, wonderful.
It's one of the highest in all the tribal casinos. It's really nice to see everybody up there earning the money,
that's
taking
right,
pride in their buildings, taking pride in their bands again up there, and
taking
actually turning everything
home
around.
It's wonderful. Mm-hmm. And so that took you about a year and a half to get that all set up?
Right. That took actually a little bit longer than that in the background for all the financial and planning and development stages, and then mm-hmm, I came in for approximately a year to a year and a half to do the hiring, marketing, slot analysis, as well as the training of all the new employees.
Oh, great. And so now what are you going to be doing now?
I have no idea. I'm just waiting for that magic phone call to ring and send me off to the next exciting casino someplace.
You heard that, folks. If you need some great help from a great man, here he is.
One of my cousins, Dave Jacobs, is a lobbyist, and I was asking him about Abramoff. And he says, don't talk to me about that, man.
I don't blame him.
Yeah, that's a bad name in Washington and a lot of Indian reservations, too. Well, we're going to go back to a little bit of music here, and we'll come back and talk with Fish Mosser a little bit later. And thank you very much.
Thank you, Fish.
Let's hear a little bit of the Song Catchers.
Mother's daughter,
Hello, folks. Get out the pencils and papers again. I have some more announcements. Andrew Fisher will give a lecture entitled Sites of Persistence and Resistance, Uncovering the Hidden History of Indian Homesteading on the Columbia Basin. It will be held June 22nd at 7 p.m. at Peterson's Auditorium in Vancouver, 1115 East 5th Street, Vancouver, Washington. Contact Mary Wheeler, 503-734-7772. 734-7772. This is free and open to the public, and refreshments will be served. Andrew Fisher will also appear as a guest on John Talley's Indian World, this program on 90.7 KBOO on Thursday, June 29th at 1:30 p.m. You can also pick it up at kboo.fm on your computer. The next one, we all know about the Delta Park powwow, the big one coming up this weekend. And this is for the future, coming up, the Grand Ronde Veterans Powwow, July 7th to 9th. Saturday's grand entry is at 12 p.m. and 6:30 p.m. Sunday's grand entry is at 12 p.m. All drums and dancers are invited. The public is invited, and campsites are available. Absolutely no drugs or alcohol allowed on the property, of course.
And someone always asks us every now and then, non-Indians will say, well, is that open to the public? Yes, that's open to the public.
Yes, sir. It's open to everyone. And if you need more information, call Jean Labonte at 503-879-5342. 879-5342. A couple other ones I wanted to announce was June 16th and 17th, the Eagle Plum Powwow, Highway 99 North, Elmo Mountain. Contact Aggie, 406-675-0696. The next one is June 16th to 18th, Winds of the Northwest Powwow. Field adjacent to the Indian School on Conan Avenue in Olympic, Washington. Contact Solomon at 360-951-8171. 360-951-8171. The next one is July 1st to the 4th, the Toppenish 4th of July Powwow. It's the Toppenish Powwow and Rodeo Grounds South Division. Contact 509-865-5566. 509-865-5566. I have two more here. One July 7th to the 9th. That's the Grand Ronde Veterans Powwow. And I just announced that one. And the last one is July 13th to 17th, the Standing Arrow Powwow, Elmo Powwow Fairgrounds, Elmo Mountain again. Call Lucinda, 406-849-6056. 406-849-6056. John?
Yeah, so get your Land Rovers out and make the circuit there. Go on the Powwow Trail. There's no reason you can't do it if you've got the time and you can afford the gasoline. That's become a big factor. We may end up going back to horses at the rate of the gasoline costs going up. This morning we had an earthquake, and that was down there in California. So it was 4 point something or other, but apparently didn't do any serious harm to anything or anyone, and they're fortunate this time that it was a comparatively mild one. But where they occur, it makes a big difference in addition to the fact that they're there. One of the reasons that tsunami did so much damage was that it went through some extremely populated areas, and so it wiped out all kinds of people over there in Asia and even East Africa. But now they've got problems in Indonesia with Mother Earth raising hell over there. The ground is shaking up a storm, and the mountain is putting on quite a display, Mount Merapi over there in Java. And we hope those people come out of that okay. Well, Lewitt up here in Washington, known to some of you as Mount St. Helens, has shaken herself up every now and then and put out a display for us to see, and sometimes a little shaking going on there too. But She's resting again. Talking about earthquakes, let's hear about an earthquake in one of the traditional languages.
Native word of the day, highlighting one of America's many indigenous languages. This word comes from the language spoken by the Athabascan Indians of Alaska's interior region.
Today's word is Ngatdaltan. That means earthquake. Ngatdaltan Godran. Today was earthquake. That is today's Dakotan Athabascan word of the day. Ngatdaltan. Ngatdaltan. Earthquake.
Native Word of the Day is a production of National Native News with support from Public Radio International, the Alaska Humanities Forum, the Rockefeller Foundation, and the National Endowment for the Humanities, a federal agency. For more information, visit our website at www.knba.org.
OCO, I have a memorial tribute that I'd like to express for my ex-husband, Richard Daniels. His name was Skip, part Cherokee from Oklahoma. And he went yesterday with the Great Spirit. Grandfather welcomed him home. And I'd just like to send out all of my prayers to all of his family, to my children, to us all, so that we don't grieve too much, because he is in much better arms than they were here. He's also the son-in-law of tribal council member of the Warm Springs Reservation, Kenny Smith, that many of you in the Northwest know of. His name was Richard Daniels. His children were Danielle and Sean, and his wife was Deborah, and I'm his ex-wife, Samantha, and the Great Spirit has in his arms. Aho.
Hey, 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 hey
Yeah, young ones are coming in as the old ones are going out, and that is a children's song by the Songcatchers, which included, among others, our friend Arlena Skye, Laura Labi, and one of the Neville brothers, Charlie Neville, appears on this, and that was recorded up in Seattle.
Thank you, John.
Well, you're welcome, Samantha. But I have, as they say in those old KTEL commercials, but wait, there's more.
That's right.
I want you to know that the next song I'm playing for you, this is for...
Thank you.
This is for our Cherokee lady here.
Thank you.
This is Independent Native News for Thursday, the 15th of June. I'm Bonnie Sue Hitchcock. A new report details how susceptible Canada's First Nations are to violence. As Craig McCulloch reports, the statistics again show that when it comes to crime, the plight of Aboriginal Canadians is far worse than the general population.
The report looks at both Aboriginals who are victims of crime and offenders themselves. Like other studies into the social and economic well-being of Canada's First Nations, the results portray a dismal picture. It finds that about 40% of Aboriginal people 15 years of age and older were victimized by crime, 12% higher than Canada's general population. Aboriginals are also twice as likely to be repeat offenders of crime and 3.5 times more likely to be victims of spousal violence. In terms of reported violent crime, those aged between 15 and 34 were 2.5 times higher to be victims than those 35 years of age and older. It found that 60% of violent crime goes unreported by First Nations, about the same as the general population. In terms of homicides, the study finds that while Aboriginal Canadians only make up 3% of the overall population, they were 17% of victims and 23% of the accused. It also finds that the average homicide rate is 7 times higher for First Nations. First Nations were less likely to be charged with first-degree murder, with 20% of accused Aboriginal individuals being charged in comparison to 46% of the general population. The report also finds massive discrepancies in the number of Aboriginal prisoners. In the province of Saskatchewan, 80% of those in provincial jails are Aboriginal, while only 10% of the adult population in the province is of Aboriginal descent. The figures come from a report prepared by the Canadian Center for Justice Statistics. For Independent Native News, I'm Craig McCulloch.
The Federal Native American Graves Protection and Repatriation Review Committee met this month in Juneau, Alaska. The committee reviewed a reburial protocol from Iowa and heard about a potential dispute between the White Mountain Apache and a Chicago museum. Coast Alaska's Ed Schoenfeld reports.
The NAGPRA Review Committee heard about a plan for handling human remains discovered in Iowa that can't be tied to a specific tribal group. NAGPRA staffer Tim McEwen says the majority of Iowa's tribal groups have signed on to the plan.
The committee reviewed that proposal, which is sort of a prospective way of dealing with unidentifiable remains that the state discovers, and recommended that we go along with reliance on their state law, which is not to transfer them to a tribe per se, but is actually to do a reburial on state land.
He says the plan looks toward the future and is not tied to a specific discovery. The NAGPRA panel also heard about a possible dispute over objects from Arizona's White Mountain Apache that are in the collection of the Field Museum of Chicago. McEwen says progress was made during the meeting.
The parties actually began consulting with each other in the midst of the proceedings as they went off into the hallway and kind of worked some things out. And they changed their positions right there before our very eyes. And while they have not accepted this agreement that might be brokered, they're going back to their respective leadership to see if this is okay.
The review committee gave the groups a deadline to agree on the issue. The NAGPRA review panel's Juneau meeting was its 32nd since it was formed in 1992. The next meeting will be in Chicago or Denver. This is Ed Schoenfeld reporting from Juneau.
Officials from the Cheyenne and Arapaho tribes of Oklahoma say they plan to open a 2-year college in Weatherford, Oklahoma. The Cheyenne Arapaho Tribal College will operate under Southwestern Oklahoma State University until it can offer its own accredited courses. Southwestern has supported the vision for the college over the last 3 years by instituting an American Indian Studies program and offering Cheyenne language courses. This is Independent Native News. I'm Bonnie Sue Hitchcock.
Supported by Ridolfi Incorporated, using engineering and science to improve the quality of the environment for over 15 years. RIDOLFI.com. And by Amerind Risk Management Corporation, a native venture protecting Indian country's assets. www.amerind-corp.org. Our theme music is provided by Jeff Silverman. Independent Native News is a production of KUAC at the University of Alaska Fairbanks.
Hello, folks. I just wanted to remind you one more time about the 36th Annual City of Roses Delta Park Powwow and Encampment, June 16th to 18th this weekend at the East Delta Park, North Portland, Oregon.
You know, that's tomorrow.
That's tomorrow
we're talking about.
Friday, the 16th, it starts at 7 p.m. Saturday, the 17th at 1 p.m. and 7 p.m. Sunday, the 18th at high noon. For more information, call
503-740-5373. 740-5373. Thank you, Samantha. You've been listening to Indian World on your community radio station, KBOO. This is your host, John Talley. Thank you for listening, and we'd like to remind you that we'll have one more show on the 29th, and we'll have a guest at that time. And then the great one willing, when July gets here, July 6th, we'll have a two-hour show starting at 1 o'clock instead of the usual 1:30 and continue until the usual 3 o'clock. So it'll be a two-hour show that time for the 31st anniversary of Indian World.
Like the Seminole, Navajo, Kickapoo, like those Indians, I'm an Indian too. A Sioux, a Sioux. Ground, and I'll have totem poles, tomahawks, pipes of peace, which will go to prove I'm an Indian too. A Sioux, a Sioux. With my chief in his teepee, we'll raise an Indian family, and I'll be busy night and day. Looking like a flower sack with two papooses on my back and three papooses on the way. Like the Chippewa, Iroquois, Omaha, like those Indians, I'm an Indian too. A Sioux, a Sioux. Just like rising moon, a Sioux, a Sioux. Some Indian summer's day without a care, I may run away with Big Chief, son of a bear. And I'll wear moccasins, wampum beads, feather hats, which will go to prove I'm an Indian too. A Sioux, a Sioux.
You're listening to KBOO 90.7 FM in Portland, around the Pacific Northwest. Stay tuned for the African Dance Party for a Thursday afternoon. Time is now 2:59 in Portland.